It's religion today, it's ideology today, and our secularist friends also have a faith.
Some kind of Disneyland fantasy.
I know how this is going to get heard in the secular world.
Where the pseudo-Christian masks are off.
That's nonsense, ladies and gentlemen.
Apologetics isn't just about giving answers to other people's questions. It's also about learning to question other people's answers or even question the question itself.
In a Christian worldview.
Well, welcome to Quantum number 302. A Quantum is a podcast that looks at news and views from a Christian perspective. For those of you who are completely new, my name's David Robertson. I'm a Scottish Presbyterian minister who lives and works in Newcastle, New South Wales. I was going to say that I am 62 years old today, actually. So this is me celebrating my birthday by recording this for you. And what we do in Quantum is we look at what's going on, I was going to say throughout the world, but this one's particularly focused on the UK, the US and Australia, because there's just been so much going on in this past week. And I've got some great clips that I wanted to share with you. What I've also been doing in terms of music is going through my top 100 Spotify from last year. And we're going to be doing numbers 35 to 31, starting with this, another one from Delamitri.
Driving through the long night, trying to figure who's right and who's wrong. Now the cat has gone. I sit belted up tight, and she sucks on a match light, blowing bronze. Steering on, and I might be more a man if I stop this in its tracks and said, come on, let's go home. But she has got the wheel, and I've got nothing except what I have on. When you're driving with the brakes on, when you're swimming with your boots on, it's hard to say you love someone, and it's hard to say you don't. Steer the conversation from the thing we've done. She shuts up the ashtray, and I say it's a long way back now home. She just yawns, and we might get lost someplace. So desolate that no one will where from would ever come. But she's got the wheel, and I've got to deal from now on. When you're driving with the brakes on,
driving with the brakes on, trying to figure out who's right and who's wrong. Well, yeah, we are trying to figure out who's right and who's wrong. And, you know, sometimes I think in life, it is like we're driving with the brakes on, isn't it? Anyway, we're going to start with this, what is happening in the world in terms of the whole trans stuff. Now, can you imagine 5 years ago, 10 years ago, certainly 15 years ago, this as a headline making any sense whatsoever? Here's the headline. The NHS is to declare that sex is a matter of biology in a landmark shift against gender ideology. I mean, in other news, the Pope's a Catholic. Well, maybe that one doesn't work so well nowadays, actually. The Pope's a Catholic. The earth is round. 2 plus 2 is 4. and sex is a matter of biology. But such has been the influence of the trans ideology upon our media and cultural elites that this is actually news. The NHS is going to change its written constitution and it will ban trans women, that is men who want to be women, from women-only wards. In 2021, NHS guidance had said that trans patients could be placed in single-sex wards. And the new constitution states this: we are defining sex as biological sex. Well, about time. Now, that's a real plus. The New York Times, though, always behind the times. Just so on the wrong side of history. Put out a report saying that trans women are the same as women. It's a ridiculous report. A study bolsters idea of athletic difference between men and trans women. So that's what it's comparing. But the authors of the study, well, you can tell their preconceptions. They use terms as cisgender women and assigned female at birth, which means they've already moved way beyond science because nobody's assigned female at birth. In fact, as the article on Unheard, and by the way, I do put links to all the articles I refer to on the website, theweflee.com. But this article in Unheard says this: if we are all randomly assigned a sex at birth, how are we to know that the cisgender women in the study were actually female rather than boys brought up in the wrong gender? Just wow. And then this one, I don't even know what to say. I thought this has to be a spoof, but it's not. This is the stunning thing. It's not. It's somebody called Anne Lesby, who has a PhD. She tweeted out this: Misgendering a pet can result in serious micro subconscious distress. Pay attention to clues. Your pet will let you know his, her, their, sir identity through things like body language, toy preferences, and reaction to gendered pet clothing. Oh, please let that be a spoof. I cannot believe. Well, actually, I can. I can because of the kind of culture that we live in at the moment. I can because, although we're not going to look at this, the protests by US students, which then, of course, automatically get copied everywhere else about Israel when they don't even know about it. You know, it's just the violence and everything else. The ignorance in our society is astonishing. And that ignorance is seen in different ways. So we've been talking about censorship quite a bit. Now, listen to this clip from Lord Robert Winston.
Say this categorically, that you cannot change your sex. Your sex actually is there in every single cell in the body. You have a chromosomal sex, you have genetic sex, you have hormonal sex, you have all sorts of different kinds of psychological, brain sex, they're all different. And we are very confused about this, unfortunately, and regrettably, it's got into this argument that people are now will now accuse me of being transphobic.
Oh, look, there are trans people who say you absolutely can do that.
Well, unfortunately, you can't say this publicly. This is one of the big problems. Even saying this on this program undoubtedly will result in my getting a huge amount of hate mail. It always does.
I mean, who's Lord Robert Winston to say sex is biology and you cannot change your sex? He's just one of the top scientists in the world. Well, that clip, would you regard that as hate speech? Because TikTok in the US and the UK did, and they banned it. In fact, they put out this: TikTok is enriched by the various backgrounds of our community members. Our differences should be respected rather than a cause for division. We do not allow any hateful behavior or hate speech. Saying that humans cannot change sex is hate speech. Now, they've since rescinded on that, but the very fact that they could even do that, which is why we should not be relying on government and big media companies, big tech companies, to censor on any basis. For that reason, I thank the Lord for Elon Musk, because he's blown apart so much of that. But Twitter used to be like that. I've been banned from Twitter several times for misgendering people. All right. Look, let's chill out with... I've actually... Most of my music is very chilled this week. No heavy metal, just a bit of Bach. Thank you. that's the well-tempered clavier. Now, we have to come on to the big story of the week in Scotland, which is the resignation of Humza Yousaf and the fact that, well, he, right, the story is very simple. This goes back to the trans issue, that the CAS report, the Greens did not like it, so they spoke out against it. They're in partnership in the Scottish government. The Scottish government, the SNP, were saying, we can't ignore this scientific report. And so Humza Yousaf got rid of the Greens, and the Greens then got rid of him because they said they would vote with a Conservative motion, by the way, a Tory motion. And when you say Tory with them, you have to spit it out, Tory. They said they would vote with that. And so Humza decided, or was compelled, to resign. Now, that means there's going to be an election for the leader of the SNP and the new First Minister. And deja vu, we're back where we were a year ago, where Kate Forbes, the Christian, was from the Free Church, ran amazingly close to Humza Yousaf, and she's back in the picture again, though she hasn't said she will run. And the SNP hierarchy, again, are desperate to stop her, even though she's by far the most popular, the most competent, and was actually completely right about what she said about Humza. He hasn't lasted. And so all the hates has started up again, the anti-Christian vitriol, which should be reported under hate crime, but won't be. But there is an astonishing article from in the Times by Kenny Farquharson. Now, this is in the Times. And again, please do go to my website. You'll see a response I've written, which has gone completely viral. But Farquharson basically says she's not fit to be First Minister in Scotland because although she's by far the most competent, she's a Bible-believing Christian. It is that level of prejudice. It's also ignorant, it's also illogical, and it's also historically, hilariously bad. But please do read the article to see what we're talking about. But all of this reminded me of this. Now, I want you to listen to this. It is really better to see this on video, but you'll get the gist even just by listening to it, a wee kind of radio drama, if you like. This is Tracy Ullman, the comedian.
While my time in America isn't directly relevant, I think it gives me an extra layer of experience to draw on.
Absolutely. That's very impressive.
I hope I'm not blowing my own trumpet too much here.
If I had a trumpet this good, I'd be blowing it non-stop. Look, I think we're done here, so... I mean, obviously, I can't say anything official right now, but you should expect a phone call.
Thank you. I just find it so difficult to boast on my CV. It's just that, as a Christian, I...
Oh. What? You're a...
Christian.
Yeah, okay.
Is that a...
No, not at all. You don't seem to mention it anywhere here.
Well, why would I?
No, fair point.
I'm not planning to run your polymer factory along biblical lines.
Oh, no. Could you just give me a second, please?
Denise, may I borrow you for a second? I'm just interviewing Patricia Hughes here.
Oh, Patricia, how wonderful to meet you. Do you know, we're all so excited that you've applied for this role. It's really very flattering when somebody of your caliber.
Oh. Yeah.
Okay.
There's a problem with me being a Christian, isn't there?
Absolutely not, legally speaking.
But you both seem uncomfortable for some reason. Do you think that it makes me untrustworthy?
No.
Incompetent?
Mm-mm.
A bit weird? I see. Well, in that case, I'll just withdraw my application.
Oh, now.
It's funny, isn't it? It's been perfectly normal to be a Christian in this country for the last 1,500 years or so. But now, well...
Really sorry about this.
It's fine. I forgive you.
Lucky escape.
Yeah, what a nutter.
Now, isn't that brilliant? I think it's absolutely brilliant. Perfectly normal to be a Christian in this country till 5 minutes ago, kind of thing. But not now. Not in many places. In Scotland? No. And elsewhere? No. Perhaps. Perhaps. We'll see. As a result of my posting that article, I received the following, which was a press statement from the Indian Council of Scotland and Great Britain. And I want to read this in full to you because I think it is so amazing. And at the time of writing, I posted this out. And it's about 100,000 views and retweets already. So this is from the Indian Council. Listen to this carefully. It is with increased discomfort we view the unseemly language being used to denigrate Kate Forbes, NSP, a potential candidate for the office of First Minister. Let me be very clear. I am not a Scottish nationalist and do not support the fragmenting of the United Kingdom. But that does not prevent me, nor the Indian Council of Scotland and the United Kingdom, from expressing our collective disgust at the language used to mischaracterise a young Scottish Protestant, Kate Forbes. She is, in our view, doing her utmost as a devout Christian to adhere to the teachings of her Saviour. I have never met Miss Forbes, but I understand her family distinguished themselves in India. Her father worked as an accountant, managing the finances of a group of Christian mission hospitals, which ensured people living in poverty were able to access free healthcare. For that alone, the Indian Councils of Scotland and the United Kingdom salute the Forbes family. As a child in India, we know Ms. Forbes will have been imbued with a deep love and affection for the people of India, their traditions, religions, and varying social and economic circumstances. Are some members of her own party and the extremists of the Green Party really saying a young Highland lady and a follower of Jesus Christ is not fit to hold the highest office in devolved Scotland? This bit is, I mean, it's all brilliant, but this is brilliant. If every other faith was subjected to the scrutiny and opprobrium Miss Forbes and her church is subjected to, few would be deemed fit for office by the secular religious police. Religious intolerance blights our society. And what has been said and written about Miss Forbes shames us all. I am not from her religious tradition, but I commend her honesty and the uncomplicated simplicity of her Christian faith. Her mother and father laboured as devout Scottish Christians in India. Sadly, it appears their talented daughter is not allowed to express her faith in her native land. I'll finish this note with a quote from Kate Forbes speaking on the BBC. She said, "I believe in the person of Jesus Christ. I believe he died for me. He saved me. And that my calling is to serve and to love him and to serve and love my neighbours with all my heart and soul and mind and strength. So that for me is essential to my being. Politics will pass. I was a person before I was a politician, and that person will continue to believe that I am made in the image of God." Neil Lai, Chairman and President of the Indian Council of Scotland and United Kingdom. Unbelievably good. Wonderful, isn't it? Okay, let's have a bit of a song. This is Lindisfarne, Meet Me on the Corner. All right, there's not much of a link, is there, between what that one I'm going to say? Well, actually, there is. Frank Field, a great English politician, has died. Here's a clip of him, actually. Listen to this.
"But I've resigned the whip, but I'm still a member of the Labour Party because I want really two big changes. One is we must be seen when we go into the next election that we're not racist, and this whole debate that's rumbled all summer on anti-Semitism suggests that we are. And secondly, there's now bullying, which is rife in my party and other parties, and these people want to make MPs responsible to them, not to their electorates. And I want to see progress on both of those fronts, and then I will be able to seek the whip again. People have been out canvassing and people shouting and screaming at them, what authority have you got to be putting these leaflets out? This is us trying to make contact with the electorate, reducing one of our Labour Party members to tears. I mean, that is the extent of verbal aggression is difficult to describe. I'm hoping that this will be a call really to the NEC to take seriously these charges, so that when Jeremy leads us into the next election, which he will do, that one can enthusiastically support him, that we're not racist and that we're not controlled by thugs.
You know, we often denigrate politicians, but there have been some absolutely marvellous ones, and I think Frank Field is one of them. He resigned from the Labour Party over anti-Semitism. He was a deep, deep thinker. Tony Blair, this is what I remember. Tony Blair appointed him as Minister for Welfare Reform, working under Harriet Harman. But it didn't work because he was desperately trying to rethink how we do funding benefits, and Blair and Gordon Brown just could not stand it. And I think he was right. I think Frank Field was basically right. And so his ministerial career was extremely short. But he was a committed member of the Church of England, and particularly on its, I would say, traditional sacramental side. He liked the Authorized Version of the Bible and the Book of Common Prayer. He was an honorary canon of the province of York, and for some time a member of the General Synod. He really encouraged the church not to invest in apartheid-era South Africa. So, yeah, I had a lot of time for Field, and I'm sorry to hear he's died. Another Labour politician who's in the news just now, let's come to Australia, is Anthony Albanese. Just listen to this.
Thanks very much. I do want to congratulate the organisers, including yourself, for organising this today, and for women right around the country who have mobilised to say enough is enough. And just as I left Parliament House during the demonstration that was held a couple of years ago, I'm proud to be here with women, men, boys and girls saying we want violence against women and children to stop.
That's right.
To be clear, we did ask to speak, myself and Katie, and were told that that wasn't possible, and that's fine. I respect the organisers' right to do that.
That's a full-out lie.
To do that. We're here today to demand that governments of all levels...
Now, to give you the background, this is him speaking at a women's rally against domestic violence, or a rally against domestic violence. Men and women were at it. Domestic violence is a real problem here in Australia. A real problem. And I have no wish to undermine that at all. But it's it's such a huge issue. Now, the problem is, I think, and I actually think what the government has proposed is good. I think funding for women who want to leave violent situations is excellent. And I'm actually fully behind much of this. And I praise Albanese for that. But what I don't praise is this ridiculous idea that somehow by government fiat, we can stop domestic violence. That won't stop domestic violence. We need to change people's hearts. Anyway, this is Albanese speaking at a rally, and wow. I mean, he just kind of took over. He kind of mansplained. And the woman who's in charge of the rally basically says that he lied. And most people here believe her, actually, and it has caused an enormous fuss. And so is this. Now, last week we talked about, or was it last week or the week before, we talked about how official reports of what is being said in the Scottish Parliament were being rewritten. Well, this is, listen to this.
President Biden has been at it again. He's pulled another Ron Burgundy, reading everything in the auto cue, including instructions like pause.
Imagine what we can do next. Four more years. Pause.
Four more years. Pause. Four more years.
No, Joe, you don't read out the instructions. But look at the official White House transcript of that speech where they claim what he said was inaudible. We all heard it. He said, pause.
Four more years. Pause.
Four more years.
And that wasn't the only Biden gaffe.
In a sense, I don't know why we're surprised by Trump. How many times does he have to prove we can't be trusted?
Oh, I think he's well and truly proved it by now, Joe. You cannot be trusted.
Now that's Joe Biden. He is absolutely not competent to be president of the United States. He's not cognitively competent. People might argue that his rival, Donald Trump, is not morally competent. That's a different issue. But he's not cognitively competent, because here he is once again reading a teleprompter, pause. Now that, I don't play that just to mock him or anything like that. I play it to show what happens when people alter records. Because the transcript of that was Biden saying four more years and then inaudible. But it wasn't inaudible. As you've heard, it's extremely audible. He said pause. He was just reading the teleprompter thing. Oh, it'd be funny if it wasn't so sad. Anyway, speaking of funny and comedy, here's Jerry Seinfeld.
You just expected there'll be some funny stuff we can watch on TV tonight. Well, guess what? Where is it? This is the result of the extreme left and PC crap and people worrying so much about offending other people. Mm-hmm. When you write a script and it goes into four or five different hands, committees, groups, here's our thought about this joke, well, that's the end of your comedy.
Now, what Seinfeld has done, is he's blamed the death of television comedy on the extreme left. He's 70 years old, Seinfeld, great program. I think he's absolutely correct. I think when he points out, you expect there'll be funny stuff, it is so unfunny. I mean, we love Have I Got News For You, and it's just become so unfunny. Everything is just so PC and one opinion. And that's why people are turning to alternative stand-up comics. And alternative here really means right-wing, or at least anti-woke. All right, let's just shift the tone a wee bit and let's hear a little bit. This isn't one of my top 100, but it is important because this man, this guitarist, died this week. That's Duane Eddy, an extremely distinctive guitar sound, and he said once that it came from Arizona, where he was from, the desolate, arid sound. I just loved it. All right, and here's something else from the world of nature. That's cicadas. The noise of that is cicadas, and this report from the BBC explains it better than me.
2024 is witness to a once in 221 year phenomenon, and it's all about periodical cicadas.
2024 is an exceptional year because we have two broods emerging this year. That is a dual emergence. And the last time these two broods emerged at the same time was 1803. When Thomas Jefferson was president of the United States.
The next dual emergence won't be until 2245.
Periodical cicadas are bugs, and what makes them unique is that they have a very strange life cycle. After the eggs hatch, the immatures go into the soil, and they're underground, out of sight, for up to 17 or 13 years, depending on the brood in question. And so in their 17th or 13th year in May, when the soil temperature reaches 64 degrees Fahrenheit, that's the trigger that they start coming out in big numbers. There will be billions.
So
I just think that's incredible that there are some areas of the United States, I think particularly in southern Illinois, where for the first time since, what is it, 1803 or something, that the two different kinds of cicadas are going to be coming out, the 17-year one and the 13-year ones, and the noise is something else. All right, another massive question from the Seek. Now, for those who are new, Seek is a book I wrote for teenagers looking at different questions that they sent me. And guess what the question is from this particular song? CC, Art for Art's Sake. And the question was, is there such a thing as good and bad art? And we looked at Exodus 35:35. He has filled them with skill to do all kinds of works as engravers, designers, embroiders in blue, purple, and scarlet yarn, and fine linen, and weavers, all of them skilled workers and designers. Now I'll make a confession. I love going to art galleries. I used to hate it. I used to think they were boring. But I love it. I love real art. There's so many things. And again, I put a link to this in on the website. I love going, I think, the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York. I love that. Sydney Art Museum is okay. I just get so fed up with all the kind of woke stuff. The National Portrait Gallery in London, absolutely love that. The Art Gallery in Edinburgh, I love that too. I haven't got round to discovering the ones in Newcastle yet, but I will. But I do, I think I've got a friend, Robert McMillan. Please do look him up. I'll put a link again to him. He's a fabulous artist. And here, what I would say is this. The Christian view of art is to see the value of the art, not in how much people will pay for it, and rather in how much it reflects the values and beauties of the Creator. That is good art done with humility, skill, and without pretentiousness. I recommend Francis Schaeffer's little book, Art and the Bible. As a Christian should use these arts, says Schaeffer, to the glory of God, not just as tracks, mind you, but as things of beauty to the glory of God. Well, that's what I think about, and I think it is wonderful. The other book, by the way, I would recommend that's one of the most influential books on my life is Modern Art and the Death of a Culture by Hans Ruckmacher, which is still a classic. So speaking of art, here's a little bit of beautiful music from Vivaldi's, his Cello Concerto in E minor. Couple of things from the church. Evangelist, before we go, Evangelist Rico Tice has split with the Church of England, saying it's abandoned its biblical views on sexuality and he needed to demonstrate some clear separation for it. And Rico, great guy, Christianity Explored, if you've ever used that, is now attending an international Presbyterian church in London. And then this from Russell Brand, extraordinary.
To get baptized, do you feel like, how can this ceremony have any real import? How can the gentle, or actually in my case, quite radical immersion beneath water, and in my case, a live river, make any real difference? How can the sins of the past be washed away? How can you be born again? How can you awaken anew? I suppose to answer that question, you have to inquire in what you consider the self to be, whether you're made up just of impulses and urges and memories, or whether or not you believe there is a ghost in the machine, or more likely a Holy Spirit if you're willing to invite it into your life. I've reached a point in my life where, for a long while, in fact, I've known that the material world was not enough. And more than that, as many of you are surely already mouthing, it's not even about you. This I've learned as an addict in recovery. The pursuit of my own goals and my own agenda always leaves me cold and always leaves me empty and always leaves me wanting more. You can never have enough of what you don't really want. For me, this is a new discovery. It is a surrender undertaken in gratitude and in sincerity. And I know that it's not something I'll be able to undertake perfectly, but for the first time in my life, I fully understand that I'm not at the center of my universe. And I say that as a parent. I've got three really, really beautiful kids that I'm devoted to and dedicated to. But now I know that my function here is to be of service and to be guided and to no longer be in autonomous or authoritative control of the measures and pursuits that are put before me. And that aligns so beautifully.
Now you can be cynical about Russell Brand. I know plenty of people who are. This is an opportunity. But something in me, I don't know. I love what he says in this. I don't know if he's there yet, but this is certainly right. You can never have enough. We need our sins forgiven. I must not live for myself. As one of the most self-obsessed, narcissistic people in public life, it is incredible to hear Russell Brand saying that. Is he for real? God only knows. I'm not his judge. But I pray that he is, and I pray that he really will know the new birth. All right, time's gone. I'm going to love you and leave you. I'm going to leave you with the arrival of the Queen of Sheba from Handel. Thanks to Peter for producing this. Thanks to those of you who helped fund it. It really is appreciated. Couldn't do it without you. Thanks to those of you who send comments. Constructively critical or sometimes even praising, and especially, actually, those of you who send suggestions. I take them all on board. I'm not able to use them all, but I do try. I'm recording a message for subscribers, those who donate, so you should get that fairly soon. And above all, please do pray. Perhaps also review this if you can. Spread it around. I'm off to Hobart for a conference and then taking 3 days break, and then we'll be back in time to get you next week. There's so much on in this world, and I'm just so thankful to the Lord that here I am on my 62nd birthday, and my times are entirely in his hands, as are yours. God bless you. Bye. Thank you.
Thank you.